Chapter 9. In which some more first appearances are made on the stage of these adventures, though the offices of Dombey and Son were within the liberties of the City of London, and within hearing of Bow Bells, when their clashing voices were not drowned by the uproar in the streets, yet were there hints of adventurous and romantic story, to be observed in some of the adjacent objects. Gog and Magog held their state within 10 minutes' walk. The Royal Exchange was close at hand. The Bank of England, with its vaults of gold and silver down among the dead men underground, was their magnificent neighbor. Just round the corner stood the rich East India House, teeming with suggestions of precious stuffs and stones, tigers, elephants, howdahs, hookahs, umbrellas, palm trees, palanquins, and gorgeous princes of a brown complexion sitting on carpets, with their slippers very much turned up at the toes. Anywhere in the immediate vicinity there might be seen pictures of ships speeding away full sail to all parts of the world, outfitting warehouses ready to pack off anybody anywhere, fully equipped in half an hour, and little timber midshipmen in obsolete naval uniforms, eternally employed outside the shop doors of nautical instrument makers in taking observations of the hackney carriages. Sole master and proprietor of one of these effigies of that which might be called familiar. Why, the woodenest of that which thrust itself out above the pavement, right leg foremost, with a suavity the least endurable, and at the shoe buckles and flapped waistcoat the least reconcilable to human reason, and bore at its right eye the most offensively disproportionate piece of machinery, sole master and proprietor of that midshipman, and proud of him too, an elderly gentleman in a Welsh wig had paid house rent, taxes, rates, and dues, for more years than many a full-grown midshipman of flesh and blood has numbered in his life, and midshipmen who have attained a pretty green old age, have not been wanting in the English Navy. The stock in trade of this old gentleman comprised chronometers, barometers, telescopes, compasses, charts, maps, sextants, quadrants, and specimens of every kind of instrument used in the working of a ship's course, or the keeping of a ship's reckoning, or the prosecuting of a ship's discoveries. Objects in brass and glass were in his drawers, and on his shelves, which none but the initiated could have found the top of, or guessed the use of, or having once examined, could have ever got back again into their mahogany nests without assistance. Everything was jammed into the tightest cases, fitted into the narrowest corners, fenced up behind the most impertinent cushions, unscrewed into the acutest angles, to prevent its philosophical composure from being disturbed by the rolling of the sea. Such extraordinary precautions were taken in every instance to save room, and keep the thing compact, and so much practical navigation was fitted, and cushioned, and screwed into every box, whether the box was a mere slab, as some were, or something between a cocked hat and a starfish, as others were, and those quite mild and modest boxes as compared with others, that the shop itself, partaking of the general infection, seemed almost to become a snug, sea-going, ship-shape concern, wanting only good sea room, in the event of an unexpected launch, to work its way securely to any desert island in the world. Many minor incidents in the household life of the ship's instrument maker, who was proud of his little midshipman, assisted and bore out this fancy. His acquaintance lying chiefly among ship chandlers and so forth, he had always plenty of the veritable ship's biscuit on his table. It was familiar with dried meats and tongues, possessing an extraordinary flavor of rope yarn. Pickles were produced upon it, in great wholesale jars, with dealer in all kinds of ship's provisions on the label. Spirits were set forth in case bottles with no throats. Old prints of ships with alphabetical references to their various mysteries, hung in frames upon the walls. The Tartar frigate underway, was on the plates. Outlandish shells, seaweeds, and mosses, decorated the chimney piece. The little wainscoted back parlor was lighted by a skylight, like a cabin. Here he lived too, in skipper-like state, all alone with his nephew Walter. A boy of 14 who looked quite enough like a midshipman to carry out the prevailing idea. But there it ended, for Solomon Gills himself, more generally called Old Soul, was far from having a maritime appearance. To say nothing of his Welsh wig, which was as plain and stubborn a Welsh wig as ever was worn, and in which he looked like anything but a rover, he was a slow, quiet-spoken, thoughtful old fellow, with eyes as red as if they had been small suns looking at you through a fog, and a newly awakened manner, such as he might have acquired by having stared for 3 or 4 days successively through every optical instrument in his shop, and suddenly came back to the world again, to find it green. The only change ever known in his outward man was from a complete suit of coffee color cut very square and ornamented with glaring buttons to the same suit of coffee color minus the inexpressibles, which were then of a pale nankeen. He wore a very precise shirt frill and carried a pair of first-rate spectacles on his forehead and a tremendous chronometer in his fob, rather than doubt which precious possession. He would have believed in a conspiracy against it on part of all the clocks and watches in the city, and even of the very sun itself. Such as he was, such he had been in the shop and parlor behind the little midshipman, for years upon years, going regularly aloft to bed every night in a howling garret remote from the lodgers, where, when gentlemen of England who lived below at ease had little or no idea of the state of the weather, it often blew great guns. It is 5:30, and an autumn afternoon, when the reader and Solomon Gills become acquainted. Solomon Gills is in the act of seeing what time it is by the unimpeachable chronometer. The usual daily clearance has been making in the city for an hour or more, and the human tide is still rolling westward. The streets have thinned, apostrophe as Mr. Gills says, very much. Apostrophe it threatens to be wet tonight. All the weather glasses in the shop are in low spirits, and the rain already shines upon the cocked hat of the wooden midshipman. Where's Walter, I wonder? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Solomon Gills, after he had carefully put up the chronometer again. Here's dinner been ready, 1/2 hour, and no Walter. Apostrophe, apostrophe, turning round upon his stool behind the counter, Mr. Gills looked out among the instruments in the window, to see if his nephew might be crossing the road. No. He was not among the bobbing umbrellas, and he certainly was not the newspaper boy in the oilskin cap who was slowly working his way along the piece of brass outside, writing his name over Mr. Gill's name with his forefinger. If I didn't know he was too fond of me to make a run of it, and go and enter himself aboard ship against my wishes, I should begin to be fidgety, apostrophe said Mr. Gills, tapping 2 or 3 weather glasses with his knuckles. I really should. All in the downs, eh? Lots of moisture. Well, it's wanted. Apostrophe, I believe, apostrophe said Mr. Gills, blowing the dust off the glass top of a compass case, that you don't point more direct, and due to the back parlor than the boy's inclination does after all. And the parlor couldn't bear straighter either. Due north. Not the 20th part of a point either way. Apostrophe, halloa, Uncle Soul. Apostrophe, apostrophe, halloa, my boy. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the instrument maker, turning briskly round. What? You are here, are you? Apostrophe, a cheerful-looking, merry boy, fresh with running home in the rain, fair-faced, bright-eyed, and curly-haired. Well, uncle, how have you got on without me all day? Is dinner ready? I'm so hungry. Apostrophe, as to getting on, apostrophe said Solomon good-naturedly, it would be odd if I couldn't get on without a young dog like you a great deal better than with you. As to dinner being ready, it's been ready this 1/2 hour and waiting for you. As to being hungry, I am. Apostrophe, come along then, uncle. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the boy. Hurrah for the admiral. Apostrophe, confound the admiral. Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned Solomon Gills. You mean the Lord Mayor? Apostrophe, no I don't. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the boy. Hurrah for the admiral. Hurrah for the admiral. For Ward. apostrophe, at this word of command, the Welsh wig and its wearer were borne without resistance into the back parlor, as at the head of a boarding party of 500 men, and Uncle Sol and his nephew were speedily engaged on a fried sole with a prospect of steak to follow. The Lord Mayor, Wally, apostrophe said Solomon, forever. No more admirals. The Lord Mayor's ear admiral. Apostrophe, oh, is he oh? Apostrophe, apostrophe said the boy, shaking his head. Why, the sword bearer's better than him. He draws his sword sometimes. And a pretty figure he cuts with it for his pains, apostrophe returned the uncle. Listen to me, Wally, listen to me. Look on the mantelshelf. Apostrophe, why who has cocked my silver mug up there, on a nail? Apostrophe, apostrophe exclaimed the boy. I have, apostrophe said his uncle. No more mugs now. We must begin to drink out of glasses today, Walter. We are men of business. We belong to the city. We started in life this morning. Well, uncle, apostrophe said the boy, I'll drink out of anything you like, so long as I can drink to you. Here's to you, Uncle Sol, and hurrah for the Lord Mayor, apostrophe interrupted the old man. For the Lord Mayor, sheriffs, common council, and livery, apostrophe said the boy. Long life to 'em. Apostrophe, the uncle nodded his head with great satisfaction. And now, apostrophe he said, let's hear something about the firm. Apostrophe, oh. There's not much to be told about the firm, uncle, apostrophe said the boy, plying his knife and fork. Apostrophe, it's a precious dark set of offices, and in the room where I sit, there's a high fender, and an iron safe, and some cards about ships that are going to sail, and an almanac, and some desks and stools, and an ink bottle, and some books, and some boxes, and a lot of cobwebs, and in one of 'em, just over my head, a shriveled up blue bottle that looks as if it had hung there ever so long. Apostrophe, nothing else? Apostrophe, apostrophe said the uncle. No, nothing else, except an old birdcage. I wonder how that ever came there. And a coal scuttle. Apostrophe, no banker's books, or checkbooks, or bills, or such tokens of wealth rolling in from day to day. Apostrophe, apostrophe said old Sol, looking wistfully at his nephew out of the fog that always seemed to hang about him, and laying an unctuous emphasis upon the words. Oh yes, plenty of that I suppose, apostrophe returned his nephew carelessly, but all that sort of things in Mr. Carker's room, or Mr. Morphin's, or Mr. Domney's. Apostrophe, has Mr. Domney been there today? Apostrophe, apostrophe inquired the uncle. Oh yes, in and out all day. Apostrophe, he didn't take any notice of you, I suppose? Apostrophe, yes he did. He walked up to my seat, I wish he wasn't so solemn and stiff, uncle, and said, oh, you are the son of Mr. Gills the ship's instrument maker. Nephew, sir, I said. I said nephew, boy, said he. But I could take my oath he said son, uncle. Apostrophe, you're mistaken I dare say. It's no matter. No, it's no matter, but he needn't have been so sharp, I thought. There was no harm in it, though he did say son. Then he told me that you had spoken to him about me, and that he had found me employment in the house accordingly, and that I was expected to be attentive and punctual, and then he went away. I thought he didn't seem to like me much. Apostrophe, you mean, I suppose, apostrophe observed the instrument maker, that you didn't seem to like him much? Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, uncle, apostrophe returned the boy, laughing. Perhaps so, I never thought of that. Apostrophe, Solomon looked a little graver as he finished his dinner, and glanced from time to time at the boy's bright face. When dinner was done, and the cloth was cleared away, the entertainment had been brought from a neighboring eating house, he lighted a candle, and went down below into a little cellar, while his nephew, standing on the moldy staircase, dutifully held the light. After a moment's groping here and there, he presently returned with a very ancient-looking bottle, covered with dust and dirt. Why, Uncle Sol? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the boy. What are you about? That's the wonderful Madeira. There's only one more bottle. Apostrophe, Uncle Sol nodded his head, implying that he knew very well what he was about, and having drawn the cork in solemn silence, filled two glasses and set the bottle, and a third clean glass on the table. You shall drink the other bottle, Wally, apostrophe, he said, when you come to good fortune, when you are a thriving, respected, happy man, when the start in life you have made today shall have brought you, as I pray heaven it may, to a smooth part of the course you have to run, my child. My love to you. Apostrophe, some of the fog that hung about old soul seemed to have got into his throat, for he spoke huskily. His hand shook too, as he clinked his glass against his nephew's. But having once got the wine to his lips, he tossed it off like a man, and smacked them afterwards. Dear uncle, apostrophe said the boy, affecting to make light of it, while the tears stood in his eyes, for the honor you have done me, etc., etc. I shall now beg to propose Mr. Solomon Gills with 3 times 3 and 1 cheer more. Hurrah! And you'll return thanks, uncle, when we drink the last bottle together, won't you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, they clinked their glasses again, and Walter, who was hoarding his wine, took a sip of it, and held the glass up to his eye with as critical an air as he could possibly assume. His uncle sat looking at him for some time in silence. When their eyes at last met, he began at once to pursue the theme that had occupied his thoughts, aloud, as if he had been speaking all the time. You see, Walter, apostrophe, he said, in truth this business is merely a habit with me. I am so accustomed to the habit that I could hardly live if I relinquished it. But there's nothing doing, nothing doing. When that uniform was worn, apostrophe, pointing out towards the little midshipman, then indeed, fortunes were to be made, and were made. But competition, competition, new invention, alteration, alteration, the world's gone past me. I hardly know where I am myself, much less where my customers are. Never mind them, uncle. Apostrophe, apostrophe, since you came home from weekly boarding school at Peckham, for instance, and that's 10 days, apostrophe, said Solomon, I don't remember more than one person that has come into the shop. Apostrophe, too, uncle, don't you recollect? There was the man who came to ask for change for a sovereign, apostrophe, that's the one, apostrophe, said Solomon. Why, uncle, don't you call the woman anybody who came to ask the way to Mile End Turnpike? Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.